Hi, I'm Rachel.
And I'm Robin.
You're the host of the APTA Pediatric Students and New Professionals podcast.
We are super excited for you to hear from our guests today. We hope you enjoy this interview. Thank you, Krista Cook, for joining us today on our podcast. Krista has been a PT for 13 years. She currently works as a school physical therapist in St. Paul, Minnesota, and we are so excited to learn from her and all about the school setting. Krista, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
So if you just want to tell us a little bit about your career path and how you ended up where you are now.
It's such a big question, and I feel very old now that I have to answer all of these because I don't feel that old. But yes, I've been a PT for 13 years. I started in St. Paul. I went to school in St. Paul for PT school. I went to St. Kate's. And when I was in school, I knew I wanted to work with peds. I've known since I was a teenager and babysitting and working with families that working in the pediatrics and with kids was my calling and where my passion was. So I knew very early on in my career that I would be working with kids. I didn't always know it was going to be PT, but when I was in PT school, I was very fortunate to also get a pediatric clinical, which can be hard sometimes. During that time when we finished, I knew I had a ton more to learn before I would feel confident working on my own in the pediatric setting. So that I took that as one of my drawbacks is I don't have the confidence to help these kids and families the way I should. Looking back, it just was, I'm glad I knew I didn't have some skill sets, but I should have maybe said, oh, I can do this and start trying. So I don't want people to feel like they can't do something. We need to try and ask questions. So that's something I've learned on the way. But I was able to get into a residency, and at the time, there were only 5 in the country. So I'm very grateful for my experience and being able to do that. I was in Chicago at University of Chicago Medical Center for a year, and I got to work in lots of different settings in the residency because that's part of the programming. From there, I moved to Rochester, Minnesota, and I was able to work at Mayo Clinic. Now, when I was hired at Mayo, they didn't have any peds positions open. So I learned all of the adult inpatient acute care settings, every floor, almost every floor possible at Mayo, and every unit, which actually was a blessing because it helped me learn what are these kids that are going to be adults going to have to go through. And I got to learn and meet so many different people and learn different things that I can bring into my settings that I'm in now. Fast forward, I was able to take the PCS to specialize, and I was able to get a position at Mayo in pediatrics for outpatient PT. However, I also did acute care for peds and inpatient rehab along with NICU. Early on, I had a lot of exposure to so many different parts of peds. And some of those really large medical centers, we have those options available to us. After that, then I moved into St. Paul and worked in an outpatient clinic that was part of a large medical system, but we were a freestanding clinic. So it was a little bit different. But I still had all the same skill sets, and now just working with different providers. I was able to be a supervisor there for a little while, and then the opportunity for a school position opened. I did not want to do schools. I was like, I'm going to be so bored. I'm not going to have any fun. But you know what? Somebody called me and said I'd be a really good fit and it would work out for my family life. So I asked my questions and took the leap, and I love it. I'm obsessed with it. It's one of my favorite settings now. However, I know I wouldn't be able to do all the things I could do now if I didn't have all those previous experiences as well. So schools are now my passion, and everything I learned before I use almost maybe not every single day in the school setting, but throughout. I've been in the schools for 4 years now. I've been able to bring so many different things from hospital, acute care, outpatient, into the school setting so I can relate to people or explain it to teachers. So that's like a really kind of a long-winded way of getting to where I am today. But I've realized all of them have been important to me.
Love that you've been in so many different settings. You have so much experience and it's great. It's helped you kind of get to where you are now and help you out in the school setting. So in the school setting, what does a typical day or week look like for you?
I almost go by the week because every day is a little bit different. I work in a large city. So I have 15 different schools that I'm assigned to. Not every PT in schools has that many buildings. But I'm mostly in elementary schools. We also have PTs that are birth to three, and then PTs that are like in secondary or like the middle school, high school setting, or some of our really specialized buildings that are more special education all day. So they have, there are some states and cities that will have these only special ed schools, not to segregate them, but because then they can have all their needs met in one place if they have a lot of needs. So my day in the elementary buildings, I have a lot of students that are in early childhood. So they're usually 3 to 5 years old. And those are the ones I usually see first because they'll have the most energy right away. And I'll see a lot of them in the same class together. The biggest part of my day is working with the teachers and the paraprofessionals and the other staff in the building to teach them how to help these kids. So my job is I do a lot of hands-on, but the most important thing I can do is teach and show somebody else who's in the classroom all day long how to help the kid. Because then if I'm only there for 30 minutes on Monday, this teacher will have them the rest of the day and then the rest of the week and the rest of the school year. And if they can see what I'm doing and add it in to some of their activities, then the child gets that many more opportunities and experiences. Just like in outpatient, if we're doing pediatric torticollis stretches, I'm showing mom and dad, here's what you do after every diaper change or something like that, so that you can carry it out because you're not, I don't live with you. I can't keep it going that way. So I'm very much an educator for the educators in the building. The other parts of my day are also spent fixing equipment. If some of the equipment isn't right and the kids, like if a wheelchair brake is malfunctioning, I need to go in and fix it because they need to be able to safely get on and off the school bus and safely get in around their classroom and the hallways or sit at their desk. And if something's not working, we need to make sure that they have access to it so that they can participate in their education. Lots of other parts of my day are in meetings too, not all day long, but if I have an IEP or what we call child study or meetings with the whole special education team in a building, that's where I get to also indirectly talk to people that work with the students, maybe not when this kid's there because it might not be appropriate to speak about the child in front of other people, or I need to learn more information from their parent. So their parent might be at the meeting and then they can give me their new medical updates if I haven't gotten them already from the medical team, and then share them with others. So I thought the medical world was all about collaboration, and I know it still is, but I've really learned how much the academic and school-based setting is even more collaboration. Like I've actually started bringing it. I still work on call for a health system here, and I've been like, oh, I can change this and bring this into my health system because I don't talk to these doctors enough or other people that work with these kids. So the schools have really helped with that.
Besides teachers and their paraprofessionals, who else are you collaborating with throughout the day? And like, when are you collaborating with them? Is it during meetings or other times?
I also am collaborating with an outpatient therapist. If the child's also getting outpatient PT or OT, I'll be collaborating with their medical team, with their doctors or nurses that they see outside of school. So I can make sure that in the buildings, we're following through with what they need medically and keeping them safe so they can still learn and have access to their education. With teachers, I might be helping them make their schedule for the day. If a student needs a break out of their wheelchair, I might be working with the teacher on when do you have reading time? When can they get out of their chair that's not disrupting the student and not disrupting the other students, but that's like a seamless, normal thing so that they can participate with their peers. And some teachers have never seen a wheelchair. And so I might even be educating them on how to use the wheelchair. So anything to keep kids safe and make sure that they're totally included, because they could easily, oh, the wheelchair will just sit in this corner and it'll be fine, but it's not fine because we don't let other people do that. So I'm also working with safety teams on how to safely get kids through hallways. Like if some kids are fragile, I need to make sure that other people that aren't even their classroom teachers in the building know that the student can't touch them or their wheelchair needs to be not touched by any other students because kids are curious. So working with other people in the buildings as well. And then the school nurse I work with a lot because they're helping collaborate with the medical team as well.
You really are collaborating with a lot of people. In the school setting, how do you best educate the parents then outside of the school?
We have an IEP meeting, an annual IEP meeting, and there's an evaluation so that we can actually make an independent education plan for the student. And in that meeting, I'm usually checking on what the parent wants as well, and then what we see at school. So our goal, the parent might not realize that Johnny should be doing certain things at school and he's not. And so sometimes that just having a different set of eyes, because parents aren't in school or not very often, especially after COVID. So a lot of times I'm the eyes, but I need to make sure the parent also agrees with it and they're in support of it. So I usually will call families. Now I don't talk to them every week because it'd be really hard to do that and work with the student and work with the teachers. So I do check-ins, especially if there's safety issues. That's the first and foremost. If there's any new medical changes, I'm talking to the parents and then I'm letting them know, here are the goals for school IEP, for gross motor skills mostly. And this is what I'm going to do to support it. I'm going to see them this many times, or I'm going to work with these providers or teachers that are with them. And at home, if you can do this, that would be great. A lot of times I'm not sending home exercise programs with students unless they've had a new diagnosis or a change and they didn't get a lot of outpatient support for it. So I don't spend as much time on that. Now, there are going to be times that I will need to spend more time, but and early childhood, I talk to parents more often too, because if the kids are only there for like an hour and or 2.5 hours a day, then I'll call mom and say, oh, did you know that your daughter, we practice the bus stairs and then we practice the school stairs, and this really worked well for us. What are you doing at home? So that way the two of us can make sure that in the community, at school and at home, they're doing better. Or we're kind of doing the same things that have been successful for the child.
That's awesome. Thank you. So can you describe your typical caseload and maybe some goals also that you would be working on in the school?
Yeah. So I am mostly elementary school. I have the 3 to 5 year olds and then kindergarten or pre-K up to fifth grade. I do have some kids that are 6th to 8th grade, but very few at this time. Most of my kids have developmental delay. There's a lot of kids with syndromes that are very rare. I can't even name some of them right now because I'd have to look it up in their student profile. There are a lot of children who have Down syndrome or cerebral palsy, osteogenesis imperfecta, and I have a bunch of kids also that have autism or some other neurodevelopmental issues that are causing them to have impairments and decreased access to their education. And typical goals, so starting early on, Our goals are always so they can access their education. Can they get from A to B safely? And then how much support do they need? And are we able to wean some of that support? So it's very similar to outpatient and inpatient. Like, what are our next steps to get so we can be an independent individual? A lot of my goals early on, I guess the typical ones are stairs. Can you get on and off the bus stairs? Do you need an adult handhold assist, or can we start decreasing that? So I think that's a very typical one, which sounds very boring, but it's so important. Because also if there's a fire and they need to get out of the building, we need to make sure they can do their stairs. And in schools, we really, in the community, we shouldn't be just picking kids up and going. But in the schools especially, you don't want any staff to get hurt because some staff haven't been trained on carrying techniques. That's also part of my job, is to make sure I teach staff transfer training. But if there was an emergency and staff were in different spots, they're also trained, okay, you have can't just handle kids. We need to start getting them more independent. So that's a very typical goal. Other goals are for being able to keep up with peers, being able to access the playground, all those things that are part of our physical health, but also mental and social health. And then I also, as we get into indirect physical therapy in the school, so there's direct services and indirect services. Sometimes I don't have a direct goal that is only associated with a physical therapy. I might collaborate with like the teacher or the adaptive physical education teacher on what are your goals need to be, and then can I help you with that? Like, are you able to sit in class and maintain your posture so you can do your math assignment for 30 minutes? And so I might be indirectly supporting that goal, but not have my own set goal of, oh, they have to sit for 30 minutes. Let's make it be that they can maintain their breathing, not have to be suctioned, and then still do their homework at the same time. And that might be two multiple people working on that same goal, which is why then I might be more indirect, because then I'm consulting more than giving hands-on instruction to the student.
You led right into my next question so well. So going off the indirect versus direct, how does your role vary depending on the kid and their needs and frequency of services, and then if you're direct or indirect?
Yes, this gets a little bit tricky. I like to utilize the Minnesota statutes for school-based physical therapy, and there's occupational therapy in there as well. So whatever state you're in, there should be a set of guidelines as well and a description of what these two services are, because the lingo in schools is different than medical, but I still have to ethically practice under our physical therapy rules and then also for my license. And schools will bill out. Now, I don't know which students actually get billed or not, like for insurance, but I need to be able to still provide ethical and reliable services to all of them. So direct services are usually when you're providing hands-on and then right there support to make sure that the student can practice towards their goals. And be more independent. But like, I might be gait training. I might do gait training, or I might be hands-on adjusting their wheelchair. Or how do I make their posture so they can sit in music class and participate? I might also be directly helping by doing that with the para or the teacher. So if the student is right there directly in front of me, that's usually a direct service. An indirect service is going to be when the student's not with me and I'm talking to the doctor on the phone. Oh, and then I'm talking to the teacher after that to say, oh, we need to do this and this. What can we do in your schedule to make this better? Or indirect services might also be, how do I help you set up the classroom so it's successful for every student in your class? Now, I might only have one kiddo in there that uses a wheelchair for most of their mobility, but I still want the whole class to be successful with them. So how can we make your classroom more accessible for everyone? I also work with, this is more a consultant, so I guess it's not indirect, but working on if there's new buildings that the district is trying to build or design, then I've been able to step in and help them with designing buildings as well, which has been really fun because as PTs, we know a lot of different things that work and don't work for how people move and how they have access to things. So it's been nice to also be like that consultative role. And that consulting is really more of an indirect service, if that helps people. But there are, each state has different guidelines and descriptions that they give for their services too.
Thank you. I did not know all of that about indirect and direct services. So thank you. How does the frequency of services that you're implementing vary? Could you describe that a little bit?
Obviously, it goes per student, per child. I don't want to, but we're trying to build independent humans. And if I am always with them, and not giving them a little bit of freedom, then they're not going to have the opportunity to be independent. So usually early on, just like parenting and parents out there, we are there a lot in the beginning. And then as they start taking those independent steps on the stairs or in the classroom, I can start weaning myself back. There are so many factors. It depends on cognitive skills as well. All of our children have the potential to learn. Some are going to learn at different rates. If I have a really fast learner who has like quad CP and has a really hard time maneuvering their body, but they can use so much communication skills, or I can do other things, I might be more involved because they're more complex and they're changing more frequently. So if the student is changing faster, learning at a different rate, then I might be involved with them even more versus some of the older kids. The teachers know them really well. Their parents know them really well. We kind of have established what works for them, and they're being as independent as they can at that level. Then I might not be as involved at that time. This is a very much it depends question. When I am looking at frequency, I also am talking to parents about bursts. So I might do similar to outpatient. I might say, oh my gosh, they just had a huge growth spurt and now I'm seeing all these changes. If I'm still on their team and we don't have to be added on as a service member, we can hold an IEP meeting and talk to the parents, or I could talk to the parents beforehand and tell them what I'm seeing in the schools and suggest, can I increase my services? Because now Johnny is able to, he's almost running on the playground. If I saw him a couple more times, more frequently, can we get him here so then I can back off and watch him again? So there's a lot of burst services as well, which is, I think, how it should be in outpatient and inpatient in all of our services. There's going to be growth spurts and changes in medical needs, and that's going to change our frequency. So that's a really hard question. There's not one size fits all.
I love how you highlighted the importance of meeting each child's specific needs. And that's important no matter what setting you're in, as well as episodic care and bursts of care as well. So can you describe your daily documentation as well as your involvement with the IEPs?
Mm-hmm. So daily documentation is a SOAP note. I'm going to do subjective, objective assessment, and then my plan. For my school district, I have a set, documentation systems are going to be different everywhere, but we still have that baseline that we can follow as PTs. And I need to also, let's say they were being billed for services, I need to cover for my license and show that I'm actually needed to support what we're doing. So I'm usually writing a SOAP note, and I have to make sure that I'm including some of those skilled services that we would be doing. If I can't, if I'm writing notes, I'm like, oh, I cannot show a skill here, then I know I can talk to parents and decrease some of those minutes, but that's when we'd have an IEP meeting. So we usually have IEP meetings, they have to be annually, but sometimes they're more frequently, depending on if a child changes or if they're going like pre-K to kindergarten. We'll have some of those like transitional IEP meetings. IEP meetings and evaluations are a little bit different documenting. I always start the same as if I were in the medical setting, but my lingo, how I phrase it, needs to be, everybody needs to be able to read it, not like a doctor or a nurse. The parent needs to be able to read it. The teacher needs to be able to read it. So if I'm writing plan reflection in my IEP and my eval and the parent reads it, they might know what that is, but a lot of people aren't. So I need to adjust it. So I will write it medically and then go back and change all my medical jargon to be more user-friendly for everyone. So that's kind of a difference that actually was really hard for me in the beginning. I still sometimes am like, oh, I just need to type this in my PT medical brain. And then I'll go back and I've had other people read it to ask them, hey, if you can you tell me if I missed something in here that's too medical based. So that's a big difference. IEPs are also like a time to do progress because we update the goals at that time. That's when we are going to change how hard the goals are and collaborate with the whole team on, oh, can Sally do these stairs on and off the bus by herself? Because like I said, I'm not always there. And so I rely on the whole team to say, was she able to do her stairs with you? Now, I'm asking them the whole year. It's not just at that IEP meeting, so I should know ahead of time. But you can always catch it when you're going back for those IEP meetings and then checking with parents if they're noticing anything too. So the IEP is also for the whole team. Like I need to know what some of the OT goals are and what the speech goals are and what their cognitive classroom goals are because we're there for the whole picture. So we get some of that transdisciplinary service roles as well. We rely on each other because it's a whole school community taking care of the kiddos. So
thank you for sharing so much about the school. I have loved learning the ins and outs of the school setting. I do have just one final wrap-up question that we're asking all the interviewees. So what advice would you give students and any new grads who are interested in working in the school setting?
I would say, see if you can shadow. Or observe if that's an option. Knowing where I came from, and I've had coworkers who have gone right into schools, not doing like all the things I did before. They went right into the school setting. I would really recommend doing inpatient, outpatient, something prior to going straight into the schools. It's not a requirement, but there's so much to know medically that you need to bring back and teach other people in the community or at schools. I wouldn't want somebody to miss it. So I think actually going into schools a little bit later is really important, not required, but it really helped me. And then asking lots of questions. Like there are still some terms in the school that I don't fully understand, so I need to ask. Just like if I'm coming in saying osteogenesis imperfecta and a teacher's like, what? I don't even know what you're talking about. But to me, it's a term and medical diagnosis I hear all the time. They might be talking about other academic language that I don't know about. So it's a working relationship that it's okay to ask questions, even if you might feel a little bit silly because other people feel silly too. And I think new grads are usually really good at that. Also, if you are feeling like you don't have confidence to do a new area or go into pediatrics, like I did not feel confident even after years of working with kids, try to give yourself a little boost. Like read another book and then go, okay, I'm going to try this. Because if you don't try it, you're never going to make it anyways because you're just setting yourself up to not try. So I think that's one thing I maybe would tell my my old self, like, have a little bit more confidence. You know, you can do a little bit.
That is great advice. Thank you for sharing all of your experience and your wealth of knowledge with us. We really appreciated having you today on our podcast.
Thank you.
Make sure to follow us on social media. Links are located in the episode notes. And make sure to check back next month for our next episode.
Special thanks to Peyton Whiteside and Annabelle Hearn for making this podcast possible.
See you next month.
Thanks so much for listening today. We hope you learned as much as we did.